Salutations, everybody. It is Maddie here today, and welcome to episode 82 of Defining Duke Ultimate, a Defining Duke supplement. Today, I am joined by, I don't know what I want to call you this week. I sometimes like to take like the company or the game we're talking about and tie your name into it. Like, I was going to call you the Embraced One, but that almost makes me sound jealous in a way. Like, he's the embraced one, I'm the neglected one. Yeah. Anyway, joined by Lord Cognito, as always, Cog. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Doing good. See, my boy. Nice. Time for some ultimate action. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So we got a very good discussion piece. Something's moving a lot of things, embracing a lot of things, and we got to talk about it. We got to talk about it.
Absolutely. So yeah, we missed this news last week because of the timing of our episodes. Unfortunately, just the way things rolled out, all of the news for the week really hit afterwards. We'll still talk about this on our main episode, but to get that full conversation in, I wanted to make sure we sink our teeth in to DDU with this, more so to tackle the angle of Embracer Group as a whole, right? This is a large-scale company that's grown even larger, and people are starting to take notice because they're taking bites out of things that they're more familiar with. The Western Division of Square Enix, Lord of the Rings IP. We're going to get into each of these deals and talk about them in finer detail. So first thing I want to go over, Cog, is their most recent move that really put them back on the map again, which is about the Lord of the Rings. So they entered an agreement, one that we talked about on this past week on DDU. We got a write-in about it, thanks to the partnership between Private Division and Way to Workshop, which was, where was the Lord of the Rings deal? You know, at the top of the year, it was said, hey, this is a $2 billion deal. Come place your bets. And we heard nothing of it. It seems like Embracer Group won the race. So they put on a press release on August 18th that they have entered into an agreement to acquire the IP rights to the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit literary works by J.R.R. Tolkien. This is a huge deal because much like when Xbox or PlayStation or Nintendo get their hands on an IP, you think of all the possibilities with the studios beneath them and what they can make with them. The interesting part with Embracer Group is they have hundreds of teams that can now work within all of Middle Earth. So I want to know for you, first of all, you Middle Earth guy at all? Do you like that type of stuff?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Nice. Absolutely. Good. The Rings of Power, all of that, man. Oh, yeah, big time.
Oh, you're in on Rings of Power. Okay, mm-hmm. That's the one I'm a little... Mm-hmm. I got my foot halfway through the door on that. When I was looking at the trailers, I'm like, maybe. I don't know. Yeah. But I love Middle Earth, and I'm glad to hear you do too. So how do you feel about Embracer being the one who now will be dictating where things go in the video game space? We've seen some great movie tie-in games from EA. We saw, of course, Monolith take on the Shadow of War and Shadow of Mordor games. So there's been some good ones. Will you see an increase in frequency? What are you expecting from Embracer with this move?
Yeah, this is huge. This is huge because this specific universe, you know, prior to like Game of Thrones, like this was the universe. Like this is the thing to own. And we, you talked about the prior games. I remember the Monolith game, and I'm just like, man, Shadow of Mordor really changed the game and what you can do. There was a couple other titles, Lord of the Rings titles during the Xbox 360 era that kind of really did well. And basically utilizing this IP has shown some moderate success. So to see Embracer come in, and I think that blew me away, Maddie. It's just like, besides the games, we're talking the movies. We're talking, you know what I'm saying, the board games. Maybe not the books. I was watching, shout out to Hogue Law. He had a good breakdown of what they might not own, you know what I'm saying? And still, there's still some fractured elements to the legality now that they're taking it over from Saul Katz or whatever the company. I always mispronounce that name. I don't know if it's Saul.
I know who you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about. Saul, whatever. I confuse it with the Mets.
Saul Goodman.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. There we go. So it's just like, yeah, now that they have that ownership of it from a game standpoint with Lord of the Rings and a movie standpoint and a zeitgeist standpoint, this is absolutely huge. There's no denying it. And to be frankly honest with you, I am shocked that there wasn't more of a fight from like an Amazon or others that I thought would really compete in that space just for this aspect of it. There's still more to this deal we got to talk about, but this aspect is humongous. So yeah, I want to see what they do. There's a lot of questions here. And then you talked about earlier, you know, all the different houses that they own, you know, prior to, they just came off of the whole Square Enix, Crystal Dynamics, owner of the Tomb Raider, Deus Ex. Like, they just came off that for this. Mm-hmm. So it is highly interesting to me to see how they're going to handle it. But what do you feel when you heard about this Lord of the Rings? They are the controllers, the surveyors of this, in a sense.
I was actually kind of excited because I feel like you tapped on the idea that there were some great 360 games, right? Like, I thought War of the North was like a cool co-op game. You had Battle for Middle Earth, which I didn't play much of, but it's like an RTS style Lord of the Rings games. I always talk about Lord of the Rings Conquest, which was from Pandemic, a Battlefront style Lord of the Rings game. I feel like each time a team has been handed the reins to this IP, they've typically nailed it. Gollum withstanding. Sorry, I'm not even trying to get my slander in there. Just I'm looking at that. I'm not really seeing a vision there like I have for past ones. So I'm excited to see more people explore this. At the same time, though, because it was so, I think, carefully selected each time when there was a new venture, it was a worthwhile one. I do worry about oversaturation and what could occur there. But now that they've had some strong teams through THQ Nordic, they now have the Square Enix Western division, I do start to imagine the possibilities that could occur within this world. And I think it is exciting, ultimately, because there are certain IP that are popular that we just forget about. And I think you put it perfectly. I do think Game of Thrones sort of usurped that Lord of the Rings, that Middle Earth crowd, because like they're that high fantasy feel, and Game of Thrones captured that perfectly. Speaking of which, that's another universe that's been barely explored in video games. Agreed. Right? You had one game in 2012, you had the Telltale game, and that was it.
Yeah.
All right. There's mobile games, but that's one that really hasn't been explored. There was the rumor that before Skyrim, I think it was Bethesda Game Studios was looking to make a Game of Thrones game. I don't know if that's 100% true, but still, these high fantasy settings are not explored as often, and I'm happy to see a company that has a good set of teams get their hands on it. I'm just hoping with the amount of teams they do have that we see more of it, because I think it's being too often forgotten about. But it just goes to show with you mentioned the back-to-back purchases, that was the bigger surprise to me, because these are two splashes in a row, and we're talking about, you know, will Microsoft get their hands on Activision Blizzard? But we're seeing an Embracer Group continue to splash and over. Like, you think after Square Enix, like, they're done for a while. See him maybe next year. It's like, no, we're going to get this IP too.
Yeah.
That's very impressive. Very impressive and bold.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's the thing. It's the surprises, the frequency. Their name keeps going on. They keep acquiring. And, you know, what this deal showed me, and we'll get into it even further, it's such a varied amount of things besides just IPs as well. And they've got their hand on everything. And the question is, like, you know, what is the end game too, right? It's so much to what Embracer is doing. And, man, I got thoughts. To break down. I guess because for me, it's like, you know, when you're looking to control the IPs, but here's the thing, like, they're not a console maker, right? Also, right?
Yeah,
so it's like, you look at the top, what is it, three or whatever, and we're looking at Microsoft right now, we look at them, you know, fighting for the Activision Blizzard thing. They're fighting to get that approved. I think the latest stage right now just got through Saudi Arabia for the FTC and the regulators and stuff like that. So it looks like it's just moving along, you know, internationally. And then, you know, we look at them and we're like, okay, even with that acquisition, they're not number one, right? They're like the third or whatever it may be behind Tencent, Sony, whatever. But then you look at Embracer, and here they come, and you got, like I said, these classic IP, Legacy of Kain, Tomb Raider, Deus Ex, now, you know, Lord of the Rings, limited run games. I know you got a segment, got to talk about that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, there's so much to, and an unannounced thing that they haven't even talked about yet, right? Mm-hmm. So there's so much going on. And even with all of this, they're not even in the top 10, which is crazy as far as, you know, just game companies in general. That's the part that is really surprising. And I want to know where this is going with them. This is very interesting to me.
And what's amazing is their big bets are paying off. I should rather say their smaller bets are paying off, because we have yet to see what happens when they get the Western division of Square Enix, what happens with Lord of the Rings. They're reporting Q1 that their net sales have increased by 107%, double. They've doubled over the last quarter. Okay. That's really important to note, because what we've seen from Embracer Group is, you know, small fish. They've been really gradually bringing in to the company. And that's, again, not to mistake big ones like THQ Nordic, Koch Media. They have a variety of very big, prominent publishers within their fold. But they are making money because everyone's selling a little something, and it's a gain by volume. And so now you're throwing into the mix some big ones. And I mean, you brought it up, and we have to at least entertain it, that could we see down the stretch, if they continue to put their hands on big IP, maybe a console? Maybe.
It's interesting, right? Because
a service perhaps would be more likely.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too. We had I was at labor to speak to Brad Sands recently at ILP, and I asked the same question. I'm like, what do you think is the end game? Like, what do you think? You know, I'm just trying to pick people's minds, and he said the same thing, kind of like he doesn't see a console, because he's just like, look, you know, from a console, the hardware just loses money. It just, you know, you always, they try to get that back. Software is the money, where the money is. The question is, would they do like an entertainment / subscription service? And if they did, you know, the question then becomes, are we getting to a point of subscription saturation, right?
Yes.
And that's, those are valid points, right? You know, Game Pass is doing what Game Pass is doing. You know, you already have all these other, you know, Netflix like services, Paramount Plus, Disney Plus, all these stuff, some with varying degrees of success, you know, and things of that nature. So it is interesting to me, if they decide to do that, how would that look, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's an interesting time we're in right now. I'm jokingly, Lord Acquisition, we are in the era of acquisition. It's not even, it's so clear now. Like it's continuing. Everyone, the only person who seems to be sitting idly by for the most part is Nintendo. Everybody is in on this far as acquisitions are concerned. It's a different time right now.
You got those all-time IP. I mean, you really don't need to play the game. You don't. When you got Mario, Zelda, that's it. Yeah. Pokemon, that's it. You can just keep rehashing those and not release anything else, and you will literally be fine.
Yeah, their audience dictates that. Their market dictates that. Absolutely.
Indeed. Now, you linked this to me, and it's a really good talking point here about what happened after the Saints Row reviews. So what we had learned, many people had saw the reviews for Saints Row, the reboot that is coming out this week, and they were not good across the board, which I was relieved to see. I'll talk about this more on Defining Duke, but I was relieved to see, because ever since Deathloop, I just don't know what to trust anymore. Like when I was so confident about that one and others too, I was like, why is this so positive, like glowingly positive? Mm-hmm. So it was nice to see I'm not just standing on an island here with Saints Row being pretty bad. Now, this Axios article mentions that post negative reviews, the stock price for Embracer Group dove 7%. And it's a very interesting talking point, because something like Saints Row is a bigger AAA investment. The way that they've gained to that 107% increase is because they would do these AA indie style games, these smaller investments with a considerable outbreak potential. And because they had that, they would stand to make more money, because nowadays you can make, when I say cheap, by the way, these are still thousands upon thousands of dollars. Just compared to AAA production, which is multi-million, you can make games for cheaper, in quotes, and have a lot of revenue come back to you. And that's been Embracer's key strategy. It looks like here now with these types of deals, they are scaling up, and we're seeing one of their bigger bets with Saints Row not pay off. I can just say very confidently, all 30 hours I put into Saints Row was low quality. It looked like there was a different set of hands behind it creatively and monetarily. It looked lower budget. Like, this game looks about as good as what you saw in the 360 from the Saints Row franchise. And that was very weird to experience, to the point where when I was playing the game, Cog, you already know, smart delivery is the wave.
Of course, of course.
We don't have to check. But my brain, I don't mean to be extreme here, but my brain literally told me, go look. Like, go make sure this is a Series X and S SKU.
Right.
And it was there. The logo was there. It was optimized for Series X and S. And I was like, okay, this really does just look that bad.
Wow.
So my point being is, all that said,
not to cut you,
sorry,
it looked so bad. You had to check if it was X and S.
I swear on my life. I swear on my, because it was not even the looks. It was the draw distance, the bugs, the glitches. I was like, this feels last gen.
Wow.
This does not feel optimized for the current generation of console that I'm playing on. And I say all of that to get to the main point, which is that with Embracer Group, we're seeing what it's like to have them and their money behind a AAA game and what can happen here, where this is going to be a cratering loss for them. This was a game in development for a while. It's come out to scathing reviews. There will be the longtime fans that pick it up regardless, but this isn't going to be a game, I think, with legs, unfortunately. So I want to see from you, Cog, with now the immediate 7% stock drop, which we've seen before. It goes up and down. Probably nothing to read into too much, but how do you read into Embracer Group handling a big AAA launch like this and looking into the future?
I mean, look, I don't want to overreact only because, first of all, for the record, I'm not a Saints Row guy. I'm not a GTA guy. I've never been. It's just, you know what it is?
Interesting. Yeah, not even GTA.
Nah, I'm one of the rare ones. Because what it is, not that GTA is not good and these games are not good. The problem for COG in these games is I end up not doing the missions and I end up just doing my own thing and making my own story and robbing people and never
that's
finishing
part of
the game.
But that's not wrong.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. But it's just like I'm like, OK, I end up not accomplishing anything and hours go by wasted. Right. So it's not that they're bad. It's just that COG needs structure and push. Go do this. And I'm like, wait, squirrel, wait, oh, I can get this. And it's over for me. You know what I'm saying?
Sounds like me with RPGs. I'm like, but I didn't get any type of progression for completing that. Like, where's my skill tree or something like that?
Exactly. Literally, that's it. But back on subject. Yeah, look, I'm not going to overblow this because obviously it's one game. Yes, it's a big game. And yes, it's not a good look. These reviews are pretty scathing. They're not good. And especially what you're saying, you know, that to me is a huge indictment as far as, you know, graphical fidelity, not looking like a AAA kind of game. Here's the thing. And I think there is a right to be concerned when you do acquire. Even though I'm Lord Acquisition, I'm going to be fair. There's going to be, people are going to look at you when you acquire all these assets, right? Same way like I look at Microsoft. When you have them, what do you do with them? What happens post your control, right? And that's right. The thing. And people that are on the side of the big company acquiring, we have to look at what's happening. See, for me, when I look at Microsoft, yeah, you got your 343s, you know what I'm saying? No doubt. But I say, hey, you got your Obsidians, you know what I'm saying? Hey, you've got your Coalitions. Hey, you got your Playgrounds. You got your, like, we're not going to discount all of these things under their control that work. So for Embracer, the challenge is going to be, now that you've acquired Saints Row, Tomb Raider, Thief, Legacy, don't you mess up my Legacy game. Don't you mess up my Legacy Soul Reavers. I even want to go back to the old Amy Hennig joints with Kane was the protagonist. And those are my, like, literally, I fell in love with PlayStation because of those games. Like, the Faye Victus, that, when they used to say that, they drink the, oh, that was my joint. Anyway, Legacy of Kane heads, y'all know what I'm talking about when I said that. Anyway, they'll be love franchises now that they control. And we talked about Lord of the Rings. You start messing things up, or, you know, then things get interesting. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. The cool thing I will say, and this is where me and Saul, we had this conversation, we had agreement, is that I still, and I'm going to die on this sword, rather this alternative than these companies going under if they were not acquired and they were just left to their own devices, provided they couldn't survive. If they were, you know, they could survive and they were fine, cool, so you can stay independent. But if you can't and you can't keep the lights on and it's looking spooky, I'd rather the game still exist. You know what I'm saying? That's my thing I'm always gonna die. But yeah, this is a good example. And these are things we're gonna have to monitor. They're gonna get held to the fire. I mean, obviously it's a short-term stock drop, but you know, Saints, I'm not a Saints Row guy, but Saints Row is beloved by a lot of people. So
I will say, yeah, I'm surprised looking around at Saints Row content, how much traffic it still generates. Like Saints Row is a big deal. There's a lot of nostalgia for this series. And believe it or not, the internet scuttlebutt wouldn't tell you, but there's a lot of people really hoping this game would be great. Wow. Like there was this review on my end is doing way better than I thought it would. Mm. And then you look across the industry and everyone's like, up, like you know, everyone's rising up with this review because a lot of people were interested in this game. So that when you combine with some anticipating disaster and it's a perfect storm, but I digress. There was a lot of interest, so yeah, it's definitely something worth monitoring. On the note of what you mentioned with Legacy of Kain, one thing we have to consider as well with Embracer getting these IP, getting these studios, is THQ specifically has a knack for reviving old games. They revived Battle for Bikini Bottom, which is something we thought was impossible. They revived Kings of Amalur, which certainly felt like an impossible one. That's one of the most impressive remaster feats ever in our industry. Not as a game, but the fact that the game exists. And then late last year to drop DLC for it, more content that was originally canceled. That's amazing. And it was actually good.
Huge.
So they have a knack for bringing these games back. And I want to know from you, Cog, knowing they have Lord of the Rings, they're getting all these teams from Square Enix. The revival potential is the highest it's ever been, right? For old Tomb Raider games, for Legacy of Kain, for me personally, I don't have much experience with those games, but I do have a lot of experience with the Lord of the Rings movie games growing up, and they have Aspyr in the fold here at Embracer Group. And I'm like, I said this in my video, I'm thinking, yo, I mean, they literally do ports of old Star Wars games that are tied to movies. Like, what if we did The Two Towers, Return of the King, Fellowship of the Ring? It makes so much sense. And it's fascinating to see how these tendrils are connecting, because with that in mind, one of Aspyr's strongest partners was Limited Run, who did the physical shipping for all of their games. So we'll get into Limited Run separately in a little bit. But I want to dish it to you, Cog, about these remasters and the potential of these franchises that they're absorbing and how they stand now.
I'm in agreement with you, brother. I think that that's the thing that gives me hope with them, because you mentioned Amalur, and I got to backtrack again to Legacy of Kain. If you're a fan of Legacy of Kain, based on the history from a, you know, collector's standpoint, you know what I mean? From a retro rebounding standpoint, you know what I'm saying? Like, these are hard to get and trace. They're all over the place, right? They're all over. And my thing is, if you had just sort of a consolidated remaster of the games on a central location, that is huge. Then you generate interest again. All you got to do is give it the Mass Effect trilogy treatment. You ain't got to go super crazy. Just bring it back on today's fidelity. You don't have to completely remake it. If you remake it, fine, but that's a lot of pressure on you. I would say remaster.
Best of luck to you.
Yeah, best of you, because you start messing things up and then you know how we going to come for you, and especially the purists. So, you know, you do the remasters, you bring those out, you generate, and then people start to get the love again. Look at what's happening with Mass Effect. People now actually excited for a new Mass Effect, right? No more Andromeda energy. Salute to you, your videos of Andromeda, I'll be laughing. But anyway, you know, I'm like, he playing that? Good Lord. Anyway, God bless him. Yeah. So, you know, you're doing that, and now you generate interest, and now, okay, you got all these studios, and I don't care nobody. Listen, people could talk crap about Avengers, and I get it, but if you played it, from a graphical fidelity standpoint and a single player story standpoint, it was solid. It just, they squared them, try to do too much and do this live service that game really wasn't built for that. If they stick to their essence and go and use these studios that they have, they got quality in this building that can make some stuff with these, you know, these classic IPs. So the potential is there for great things to happen. I see the vision. I know we're going to get into Limited because I can't wait to talk about Limited. But what I'm seeing is a group that is embracing retro dual, like the classic stuff. And yeah. I like that. That's to my sensibilities. You know what I'm saying? Selfishly, I'm about that you acquire these games because I like these games. I don't want these games to die. So it is interesting. I see where you're going there. I think I see the end game. There's still a lot of pressure on them to execute, though, and execute correctly.
Yeah. Yeah, their ability to manage old IP has been pretty sound through THQ. It's really the new stuff between Saints Row and the other thing that was confirmed through their personal earnings report was the following, where they wrote, let me get the exact title here. One of the group's AAA projects has been transitioned to another studio within the group. This was done to ensure the quality bar is where we need it to be for the title. We are not expecting any material delays for the title based on this transition. And obviously, this is in reference to Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic remake, which was said to be worked on at Aspyr. And then Jason Schreier come out saying it's currently delayed indefinitely. And they're looking at Saber Interactive to take the realms of the series, which would mean that would without a doubt be a delay. And they're claiming there won't be one here. But that's, in my eyes, like another strike. It's like, okay, we're seeing a released product in the form of Saints Row. Wasn't good. That was AAA. Now, we know KOTOR Remake was to be AAA and ambitious as well. And we're seeing now it's in stasis after 2 years. It's moving studios. I'm glad they're looking to move forward with it. But, of course, I have thoughts. I want to dish it to you, though, in fairness, and know how you feel about them fumbling this ball a bit as well. I know it's not solely on Embracer. This is on Aspyre, but Embracer holds the keys to the castle, right? They got to manage these things. So how do you feel about the road KOTOR Remake is going down?
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough because I thought this would have been, again, non-development cog. I would have thought this would have been a easier, you know, thing to tackle, but clearly it's not. And they're having problems to the point where, you know, and Disney can hit you with the, that ain't it, fam. That's a bad look. You know what I mean? So the cool thing, the promising
and
thing
fired
is...
fired people.
Yeah, and fired people. But yeah, the cool thing is that, look, it's still going to, they're still going to move forward. They didn't pack the tent, right? So that gives hope. But there's a lot. They got to come back to the drawing board. The key is going to be these remasters and the remakes, excuse me, remakes and new games. That's going to be key to me. I would like, how do they navigate that and all these games quality? You know, I don't want to go again too crazy, but it's not a good look. You know, it's not a good look that this happened. I mean, that you were handed the keys, you were told to deliver a product that the companies were going to be excited about, that the intellectual property holder is going to be excited about, and they tell you, no, go back to the drawing board, people get fired. That is not a good look. I'm not going to sugarcoat it, no way, no how. What do you do next? How do you come back from that? It's going to say a lot to me. These are the things that people are going to watch, regardless of what. If it happened before your acquisition, people, it's like the quarterback of the team. Defense could, you know, not get the interception, not stop anybody. You know, all the other aspects of special teams could blow the game. But what do they do at the end of the game? They're going to go to the quarterback locker and they're going to say, what happened? You lost another game. And that's where Embrace is. It's the same thing with Microsoft now. It's like, what's going on? What's happening? Right. That's the thing. And heavy is the crown. You know, that's what you do. Yeah. You acquire.
Indeed. And, you know, I do like that they... Back in June, I believe it was May or June, they had brought Saber in to help. So it seems like they identified an issue and moved to adjust to that. And then a couple months later, we know the results of that. So the transition should be smoother since Saber Interactive was seemingly like already in on this project. As someone who, of course, is extremely excited for this game and did see it prior to anyone else, this was still a very shocking development and it looked faithful to me. And
well,
that's
good.
What's the most concern. Yeah. That's the thing is it was a very early shot of it, but it looked faithful enough where, you know, it makes you wonder what Disney and Sony are looking for as well, which again is not known to any of us. And that's a very important factor as well. And I have no reason to distrust Sony or Disney because when you look at the quality of the stuff they've been putting out across Star Wars and Marvel, it's been pretty high quality stuff. Like, I can't sit here and say they don't know what they're doing because they've handled it well. So to this point, I feel like you got to maybe not point the finger anywhere. It looked like Embracer moved to address an issue and Sony and Disney responded to what was shown that Embracer may have anticipated. So that's why Saber's in the building. Saber, as much as I like Aspyre, is a much more trusted team. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do with it. Although in my head, if I were to pick a team to do a KOTOR remake, certainly this was not the team I had in mind, but crazier things have happened. So we'll certainly see. It's just a bummer because I know there was a lot of love for KOTOR remake and KOTOR in general in that building. Old Star Wars was a big thing for that team. So it is a big bummer. But you're right. This is something that we're going to have to see long term how they respond to this as a company, because this is one of their bigger fish, right? Originally, before the Square Enix, before the Lord of the Rings, this was sort of their, I don't want to truncate all the other games they had in development, but this to me, of course, to me, was their big one though, right? Like, we're talking Star Wars. Of course, this is going to be the big brand, the big name that attracts a lot of attention to your game, unlike the others you have, which have popular IP like Destroy All Humans, SpongeBob, et cetera, et cetera. Like, you have those attached to you, but Star Wars is like a household brand. Everyone knows Star Wars. So this was one of their first big ones. So yes, this is going to be a defining release for them. And if they take the time, especially like in a post-Saints Row world, now they know, like, whoa, this thing for my experience, needed like another year in the oven.
Wow.
But yeah, it was bad. It was broken.
Mm.
This thing, man, needed some serious time. And if they can look at that and learn from it so that, you know, Saints Row had to walk so KOTOR Remake could run, then so be it. But we'll see how they respond to that. The last strand of their acquisitions we wanted to get into was their agreement to acquire Limited Run Games. This is most fascinating. As a video game collector, Limited Run Games has certainly snagged a lot of my dollars over the years. And this is a company that has been struggling this last year, not monetarily, but I think they've grown too big for what their team is. What's happening now is many of us have things pre-ordered. For me specifically, last year, like in the late fall, I pre-ordered the KOTOR Master Edition. I still don't have it. It's going to be a year before I get it. And this is going to be the case for the TMNT Shredder's Revenge Radical Edition, certainly for the KOTOR 2 Master Edition I pre-ordered, but their quality is so top-notch, it's worth it. But, I mean, a year is insane.
Ooh.
So they needed some help.
Yes.
They did need some help, because even when you're asking for, like, I just want a Switch game, it doesn't get to you for 4-5 months. It's a really long wait time. And they've adjusted a little bit. Originally, it was a limited quantity, show up, first come, first serve. Then they let it be an open pre-order window. We're taking these in now until, in the case of, I think, the KOTOR Master Edition, I think they were taking them until, I want to say, October is the Good. Month that comes to mind. So over a month, right? It's like, all right, they're going to just farm pre-orders, and then they have a cutoff date that's clear. They send out reminders like, hey, just so you know, we're not selling this afterwards. So everyone gets a chance to go on. Then you take that inventory, you bring it to a manufacturer, you produce the product. But the reality is that they're not getting it out fast enough. And no one's expecting like Amazon level, like it's got to be here tomorrow, but it's taking way too long. Yeah. So they needed some help. Embracer Group has stepped in, snagged them. Cog, I want your angle as Lord Digital. What does Embracer Group stand to gain from teaming up with Limited Run? Is it the partnership with Aspyr that got them here? I'm very curious to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, it was very interesting reading it, and it was just like, yeah, they also included the company 40% ownership in a joint venture, Super Deluxe Games, in Japan that will source more games to Limited Run on the Western market, provide a channel to sell Limited Run's catalog as one of the strongest markets in the world for physical games. This is interesting to me. I am surprised by this. I don't truly. The only thing I can get out of it is they just want their tendrils on a little bit of everything, you know. And for whatever reason, they find interest in it. And again, I still feel. I know this is a gut instinct thing, but I still feel like the owners of this company, the part of Embracer Group, there's some old heads in there. There's some retro guys in here. Like, because they keep going after these classic gamer-centric things. You know what I'm saying? So these are people, to me, that are, some of them are in tune, right, with what the history and the legacy of these things mean. And you have a company whose whole purpose is about preserving the physical legacy of titles, right? And I've had those Limited Run games. They're ridiculously well done. It's super cool looking. You know what I mean? And it's like, but to your point, I remember doing, I think it was it Streets of Rage and a couple other ones I did. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, damn, I forgot I ordered it. It took so long. It was like almost 8 months later. And I'm like,
I had that recently. I got an email update from Limited Run. They're like, your order shipped. In my head, I'm like, it's got to be KOTOR Master Edition. It's Castlevania like Requiem. And I'm like, when the fuck did I order this? I don't even remember.
Bro, that's a problem. So you,
I will check now just so we
can date. Please do. Yeah, because it's like, that was the thing. It's like, if you don't have the capacity to fulfill this, you're not going to survive. Because people want what they want, and it's just like, okay. And then I see the other people trying to creep in on the physical games kind of restoring thing and do their own thing. And it comes down, who's going to have the quicker turnaround, and the quality looks just as good. So, look, I am happy about this because I do want Limited Run to exist. Like, I love what they do. And if this means getting some more bandwidth, getting some more help, increasing those shipping times, please do so. What did you find out? What you think?
My order for Castlevania Requiem, by the way, because I learned a tough lesson I'll explain in a second, was January 14th. And I got the email on the 18th of August.
Wow.
That it shipped. That's not that I we lowballed it. We said 4 to 5 months.
Yeah.
That's seven.
Seven.
So here's what I had learned as well.
Mm-hmm.
They have good support there.
Okay.
I reached out to them because I realized two games I ordered had yet to arrive, but some others did. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, what's up? Like, where is this? Because turns out if you pre-order a game, let's say I'm like, oh, this game in August looks cool.
Mm-hmm.
Pre-order it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple others that are already out that I also add to my cart.
Mm-hmm.
When you buy it all, you don't get an order with the two games available now and an order when the thing that you pre-ordered is ready to ship.
Mm-hmm.
No, they hold the two games that you ordered that are available now and wait till the copy is produced with the pre-ordered game.
Mm-hmm.
And they send all three to you on their own as a single package.
As a single package.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So think about if you were to pre-order, let's think here, God of War Ragnarok,
right,
but you wanted to buy Saints Row.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if you had to wait until God of War was out for your copy of Saints Row to ship.
Oh, no. Yeah, no.
Right?
No, no, no,
that's what happened. Sorry, that was a bad explanation initially, but I came around. That's what's happening there. And so what I did was ordered Castlevania separately, which, by the way, tax, shipping,
mm-hmm,
it just adds up.
Mm-hmm.
But I ordered it separately so it wouldn't do this.
Right.
And it's 7 months.
And you are aware of it. And it still took 7 months because you had a separate single, mm-hmm, order without any. Wow.
Indeed.
Yeah. Someone needed to be embraced.
Yes. Yes.
Hopefully that can be helped because that is not acceptable. And they wouldn't survive continuously. Gamers, come on. We want this stuff. We are forgiving like a month or two months. But like you're talking six, seven.
Of course. Yeah, nah. Of course. Like three should be the max. You got to take the pre-orders for a while, produce the copies, make sure they're up to snuff. Like, mm-hmm, we don't want to, because that's their thing. Like, they produce great manuals, great little collectibles. We don't want to ruin all
of
that.
Of course, of course.
3 months should be the tops,
yeah,
bro.
I agree.
It should be the tops. For the Master Editions, 5 to 6 maybe, but we're talking a full year. They've really fallen behind, so they needed to be, as you said, embraced.
To me, the only justification for something like that is if like you're getting some like king level statue, right? And it's like, mm-hmm, you know, this is a huge item with a sculpt and all. Okay, now I get it. Okay, we can't get too crazy, but it's just, you know, for the most part, memorabilia and some other stuff here and there. It's like, come on, y'all.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, good point.
One thing that's very interesting here in this write-up on the Embracer press releases, it says, in addition to the limited run brand and addressable audience, a strategic value is the Carbon Engine, an internally developed technology that allows legacy content and retro games to be effortlessly put out into highly accurate emulation-based ports for modern platforms, creating a true, this is in quotes, carbon copy, end quote, of the original game. Old, well-loved, and sought-after Rare releases can be made available and accessible on all new hardware using the Carbon Engine. It is a core component of Limited Run's vision for a world that is forever physical. First shipped games with the Carbon Engine are Shantae and River City Girls Zero. Go back to all the IP they have. Do you think perhaps there was some value that THQ saw in maybe like, oh, Legacy of Kain, we want to bring that back, and we have this Carbon Engine, and like when we print discs, like, that's going to be it. Do you think maybe that was something they were taking a look at?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this all ties together. You know, you have the retro stuff, you have an engine that makes emulation from a technical standpoint more accessible. That is huge. And again, it goes back to my point with, you know, preserving a lot of these older games that are hard to recreate. We see even right now with Sony having problems with a lot of their back compat, right? And getting those things off of PS3 emulated software. And yeah, like this type of tech, and you have all these entities that could help on that whole mission is huge. It's huge. And that's why I said, I'm going to die on the sword. Like, I believe Brain Trust has some retro gamers in that boardroom. You know what I mean? They are some pure gamers in there. That's why I'm like, okay, there's some.
That's what you like to see?
Yeah, that's what you want to see. The purists. Because to me, we all know how the money guys in corporate move and act.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes as gamers, we could smell, okay, That was a cash grab. Clearly, you didn't really care about the source material, the IP. You just used the name that you own, slapped it on anything else, and then put it out there, and the effort was low. Mm-hmm. But this type of stuff, this is positive. You know what I mean? Now, they still got to execute. You still got to execute. Mm-hmm. You got to execute well because, you know, fans are passionate. But this is good stuff. I see the vision. And then, again, going back to the whole Lord of the Rings stuff and movie, like, I see how if you play your cards right as Embracer, right, and you've got a little bit of the film stuff, you got a little bit of the entertainment stuff, you got a little bit of maybe mini series, TV stuff, then you got the game, then you got the packaging, you can you can do a rollout. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. If you play your cards right, you in their quality, you could. I see what the vision is for some of these things, and all these things can interlace with each other, kind of thing.
Absolutely. And that about covers it with what's going on with Embracer between recent releases, recent investments in big IP and divisions of companies to where they may go in the future. It's really going to be interesting to watch them and how they develop because I think they can become a major competitor, and they had been mounting over time, but now I think they've snuck up on a lot of people. So we wanted to do the deep dive here on DDU. Mm-hmm. See, DDU. Deep Dive Ultimate.
I like that. I like that. Also, what a shout out. One last thing.
Please.
Tatsujin. They have a Japanese studio.
Oh, really?
Yes, brother. They got as part of this thing, they got Tatsujin, a Japanese. They made they made like some old classic joints back in the day. But yeah, like it's so crazy. Like you can get a Japanese studio. You know what I'm saying?
You can, huh?
You can get a Japanese studio. I mean, it may be harder to get a publisher, but Japanese studio, you know, we see Bethesda, obviously, you know, with what's our guys at Bethesda?
Tango Gameworks.
Right? So Tatsujin's part of it. There's so much going on. Listen, they are one to watch. They are one to pay attention to. Mm-hmm. You know, Microsoft's out here. We see it. You know, Sony's out here. We see it. But Embrace is coming. They're still going. That's the vibe I'm getting. This is not stopping with them.
Absolutely. So we will see how it all develops over time. Certainly, we will be monitoring it closely. But until then, that's all we've got for this week's DDU. So thank you all so much for tuning in. And with that, we will see all of you next week for episode 83 of Defining Duke Ultimate, a Defining Duke supplement. Take great care of yourselves, and we'll see you next time. Peace out.
Defining Duke, an Xbox podcast, is a product and trademark of Last Stand Media and Collins Last Stand LLC, and is recorded from the United States of America. The show is conceived by Matthew Mr. Matty Plays Schroeder and me, Colin Moriarty, and is written and produced by Matthew Schroeder. Matty's co-host is Barry Lord Cognito Eversley. Defining Duke's executive producer is Dustin Furman, and the show is edited by associate producer Ben Smith. All of Last Stand's theme music is by Ramon Narvaez. As you know, all of Last Stand Media's shows, including Defining Duke, are fan-funded on Patreon at patreon.com/laststandmedia. The following names are at the producer support level on Patreon, and we're thankful for your kindness and generosity. Steven Nieder, Ross Marenka, Miguel A. Brewer, Morgan Ashley, Azan, Michael Vecchio, Jerome Ferreira, SLDFMA, Daniel Diamore, Brad Cooley, Jeremy Key, Patrick Leslie, Malachi Wall, Dave Cowell, Donald John Vader, Steven Innerfield, Josh Sullinger, Madcats, Bloodborne Cart, Sultan Al-Katani, David Ghetto, Lord Starscream, Jacob Donovan, Eduardo Perez, My Name is Mayo, Logan Byford, Eddie Medina, Jason R. Zahn, Christopher Nogg, Zeno Adam, Grayson Maxwell, Cody Woodall, Blake Nesbitt, Sort of Serious Gaming, Colin Farley, Mark Arnold, Zia Parrix, Henry Groth, Relentless Rex, Tristan Palacios, Drew Mullen, Reniger Graham, Christian R., Jad Rita, Patrick Skipper, Brian Hernandez Espinoza, Chris Kelly, Remington Wilson, Dustin Graff, Zach Cohen, Peyton Stone, Jalapeno, Josh Hallen Rui, Quentin Thedens, John Keegan, Michael Buffel, Dan Root, Asak Paredes, Talisman, Christopher Morgan, Andreas Wessling, Randall Holsey, Robbie Nauman, William Holbert, Josh Godfrey, Kalike Souza, Vornak, Betty Ann Moriarty, Daniel Johnson, H Trons, Trey Woodward, Antonio C., Jay Getter, Assassinated Devil, Bjorn Campbell, Jeff Mercado, Gregory Slavinsky, Jordan Gale, Of Fortuna, John Zile, Boots, Tyler Brown, Megadeth, Poot, Gavin Newland, Alex Lapierre, Saul Balcazar, Brian White, Raul Melendez, Eric Hart, Matt Flowers, Kinnams, Joseph Baker, Chris Moore, Caswell, Antti Kinnunen, Chris, Dave Alvarez, Will Hernandez, Chris Galvin, Justin Gonzalez, Mason Kadalak, Ollie Fritz, Zach Allum, Kyle Hagel, Colin Love, Daryl E. Naiman, Ryan R. Kittredge, Toby Ryland, Michael S., Stewie108, Patrick Montgomery, Simon Dunbar, DB Cooper, Fat Houdini, Richter86, Todd B. Canning, Barrett Boswell, Christopher DeVio, Chris Morton, Johnny Waffles, Roto24, Jonathan Coates, Sean Mason, Impossible Traveler, Josh Gravelick, Jordan Town, Brian Chan, Organic Produce, Carlos Algarit, Dominic, Mike Menzel, Richard Hebert III, Miranda Grubba, Josh Yeager, Martin Beck, Joey Andrzejczyk, Nathan R., Joe McPartland, Gary Cavallo, Christopher Moore, Jacob Bell, Dennis Usel, Lou and Ray Loper, Jonathan Cortez, Dylan Burns, John Schultz, David Chestnut, Tom Quinn, Spencer F., Anton K., Alan Trembley, Tyler Bello, Ryan T. Mandel, Tony Zuniga, Sean Battershall, Robbie Hensley, Shane Miller, Alex Cabrera, Lennon Brixey, Hugo's Desk, Peter Reynolds, Anthony Vasquez, Adam Kinniston, The Rose Experience and Grizzled Veterans Media, Tyler Goodwin, William O'Carroll, Jorge Powell, Max Cannon, Phil Crone, Throw 7, Adam Nix, Josh McKinney, Michael Gates, Alex Gates, Ryan Robertson, Sean Chandler, Lockmore, Gio Corsi, Joey Gondolaker, Alex Monez, Daryl Pennington, Justin Payne, Justin Wagaman, David I. Colucci, Paul Joyce, Chad Lewis, Enrique Perez, Joshua Smallwood, Spencer Brand, Don Lee, John Cordero, Keith A. Lewis, Ashley Carlson, Marius Garson Peterson, Ryan Greenwood, Tyler Harris, Matthew Perdue, Patrick Harper, Madmock Media, Jonathan Rice, and Casual Misfits Gaming.